Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, Hall of Fame, the excitement of Indigenous Round, and we go through the Eagles and the Dockers.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is! The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Thursday morning. It's time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. It's brought to you by Tab Touch. With me in the studio, I have Glenn Quatermain, the honourable and venerable editor of the sports editor of the Sunday Times.
First time I've been called honourable and venerable. I'll take it.
And I am Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian newspaper. Quarters.
Duff.
Have an issue, mate.
What's the issue?
I'm wearing a favourite suit of mine. I bought this suit.
Looked very smart too, I must say.
I bought this suit when I was getting my hired suit for my wedding, which is about 10 years ago now. And so it's a favourite. It reflects a very happy time in my life. And I got out of the car at work today, and there's a bit of breeze blowing, and I noticed a bit of a draft.
Hmm.
And I'm afraid the suit is it's for the bin.
Surely there's a spot just in the far recess of your cupboard that you can just put it there and just, you know, everyone's got a T-shirt or something like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, my final memory will be getting out of the car and noticing the draft. So,
what, the pantaloon area?
The pantaloon area. So there you go. There's a changing of the guard.
So charcoal, is it? Charcoal in colour?
I don't know what colour you call it.
Very, very smart. Save the jacket.
I'm going to save the jacket.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Don't worry about the pants.
Yeah, okay. So what's taken your fancy this week, Quarters? What's drawn your ire?
I haven't really had much ire to draw this week. I've been a happy chappy this week, but I think we should congratulate Mel Winnan on being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Record speaks for itself.
So Mel Winnan was what I would call a footballer's footballer, and I was just old enough to see Mel when he was still at the height of his powers. The first grand final I ever went to in the Waffle was the 1975 grand final. I was a South Fremantle supporter, so it wasn't a happy day for me.
The drought breaker for West Perth, is that right?
No, they'd won in 71 and they'd won in 69, I think, as well. And they may have won in 73.
So anything but a drought breaker.
Yeah, anything but
a drought breaker. Didn't Subi break their drought back then in 73, 72?
Subi was... So 74 was East Fremantle, 73 might have been Subi.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, 72 might have been Claremont, actually.
Okay.
But anyway... Mel Winnan and Bill Dempsey dominated that day. There was 52,000 people at Subiaco Oval that day. The only bigger crowd than that ever to attend Subiaco Oval was the 1979 East Fremantle, South Fremantle Derby Grand Final. Mel Winnan was pretty close to best on ground that day, and he was the one your parents always wanted you to look like, Mel Winnan, because... Jumper was always tucked in. Socks were always pulled up. He always looked like a footballer.
9 Breckler medals, am I right?
He was 9 best and fairest, yes.
West Perth. And I think he polled the most votes in the Sandover for a non-Sandover winner.
Yeah, he finished second a couple of times.
So that just shows you the depth of quality that he produced over a very long period of time.
And, of course, the other West Australian was Bernie Naylor,
posthumously
inducted.
Remember him for the Waffle leading goal kicker every week.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. The Bernie Naylor medal, a great South Fremantle player. Always kicked torpedoes. That was his stock in trade.
Bernie Naylor and Peter Hudson, those two, all greats of the game, always kicked torpedoes.
Always kicked torpedoes. Yeah. Well done to those guys, and well done to Kevin Sheedy, a much-deserved elevation to legends.
Just well overdue, Kevin Sheedy, what he's done for the game on the playing field as a coach, and also just what he's done to promote the game, to promote its growth, to promote Indigenous players. You look, he's just got his tendrils everywhere for a good reason in footy. You can see he's passionate about the game, and both you and I have had dealings with him in the media. Absolutely my favourite coach, Kevin Sheedy. Some bizarre encounters with him over the years. I remember when the Subiaco Oval was being constructed in the 1990s.
Yep.
And there was all this scaffolding work being done, and there was a media posse there as usual, and Sheedy was fronting us, and someone dropped a spanner that all the journalists, for some reason, looked over to the left as this spanner clang-clanged it way down. But for some reason, I didn't. I just kept my eyes on Sheedy, and Sheedy looked at me and just pulled this face. It was just a funny moment. He pulled this really weird face, and when the media came back, I had no idea what he'd just done. I'd lost it, completely lost it. And at the end of it, he's just winked, and we move on. He winked at me, and that's just Sheedy. He also used to have a list next to his phone in Melbourne when I was living in Melbourne.
Who are you barrack for?
Yeah. Well, The Age produced this list of, and the back page, and they produced this list, Melbourne football writers, who they barrack for, and their passion rating out of 10. And Sheedy had that on his wall next to the phone. So you'd ring him, and then you'd spend the first 10 minutes talking about your footy team, and you'd find out he'd interviewed you about what you knew about the club and who was playing that week. He's a master like that, but just a terrific bloke and well-deserved.
I'm not sure that anyone has done more for footy in the last 40 years than Kevin Sheedy.
No, I don't think they have. I'll put Ronald Dale Barassi up there. I'm just talking, this is Victorians. But I think Ronald Dale's up there in the conversation. But yeah, I'd agree. I'd have Kevin Sheedy out there and then a bit of distance to second, I reckon. He's just been good for the game.
And, of course, where Bernie Naylor's concerned, how blessed were South Fremantle in terms of full forwards? Because they had Bernie Naylor, and he was in the early 50s, and then he handed over to one John Jerovich.
Oh, yeah. And we know, we're reminded of him every day. We drive past Freo Oval.
That's right, with that great mark over
Ray Sorrell, was it?
Ray French, I
Ray
think
French,
it was.
Ray French.
In a preliminary final way back in the 50s or 60s. So
great times for the Waffle.
And great that the Australian Rules Hall of Fame continues to recognise people who were pre the AFL.
I think
that's fantastic. And I think there's a lot of credit goes to Dennis Cometti and Bruce McAvaney.
For the South Australia WA rotation?
For making sure that happens and making sure that non-Victorian people from those earlier eras are recognised. All right, Quarters.
Oh, just before, my favourite round of the year too, part of the finals, part of the grand final. Indigenous round. I love what the AFL has done to promote Indigenous footballers. It's a great platform for Indigenous people, the AFL, I believe. And, we just look at the riches of talent that Indigenous players have added a new dimension to the game, that's for sure, or another dimension to the game. Really interesting debate around about who's your favourite Indigenous player you've ever seen. I've got a few. I'd have Buddy now at the top of the list, just what he's done over the course of his career. I'd say Buddy would be my, he'd be my number one. The best sustained a form of an Indigenous player. I just still remember Chris Lewis's 1990 final series for West Coast. That final series was as good as I've seen over the period of over finals.
Well, I'll go back a bit further. I think Polly Farmer is the one that they all are in awe of. And I remember the reactions of Adam Goods and Andrew McLeod when they picked the Indigenous team of the century. And, of course, these guys got to stand on stage with Polly, and it was beyond respect. It was absolute awe that they were on the same stage as Graham Polly Farmer.
I unfortunately didn't get to see Polly, but everything he's done for the game, changed the game
more than
anyone, really, with his ability to introduce handball as a weapon.
So I did a 3-2-1 of players from your club.
I saw that.
And Hawthorn, I have to say, for a club that didn't have Indigenous players for a long time, has come out with three pretty useful ones.
And I don't disagree with your 3-2-1. So you had Buddy as number one, and you had Burgoyne as two, and Rioli three.
And
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think over for consistency, you've certainly got Burgoyne in that second slot. And Cyril doesn't probably produce with the consistency Burgoyne does, but when he does, it's something to behold. And really missing him at the moment, Hawthorn.
Absolutely, because he gives them so much both ways, doesn't he? He gives them that extra threat to score, and he gives them that extra pressure which enables them to score off turnover.
And I think Puopolo has given him a little bit of that last couple of weeks, but I think Cyril is the sort of bloke you can go to the footy, and even if your team loses or you think you're going to lose, you're still excited about what lays ahead because he's just going to do something, Cyril, that.
He will give you five moments that you will remember for a long time.
Yeah.
Let's start going through this round of fixtures, Quarters. So Incidentally, back on Indigenous Round, I went down to Coburn on Wednesday morning to watch Richard Wally.
Yeah, geez, he does a good job.
There would be few more knowledgeable Indigenous people in this state, and the way he spoke to the club, he performed a smoking ceremony. He talked about Indigenous people and the way they resolve conflicts and the way they lived in harmony with their environment and their fellow people. And it was an amazing talk, and there's a lot of wisdom there, I think, to be harnessed and harvested if non-Indigenous people are prepared to listen. A very, very wise person and a very, very respected person.
Yeah, I always enjoy it when I'm at an event. He's the welcome to country. I love the way he performs it with great passion as well.
So Friday night, Sydney versus Carlton.
Oh, dear.
Another Friday night blockbuster, Glenn.
ODO overload, that game. They've won 8 of their last 9 against Carlton. And I was doing my tips this week, and I just, you know, obviously once I do them and I go back over them to make sure of it, and I had Carlton, and I went, my God, what am I doing? Wasn't concentrating, Duff. Sydney will win this by plenty. Won this corresponding game by 81 points last year. Late in the year, Buddy kicked 10 that night. Carlton, they were pretty good last week against Geelong, I thought, in Geelong. Yep. So they won't be disgraced, but I just can't man a case for them. I think Sydney by plenty. And better mention Hanbury's 200th game as well.
Yeah, been a very good player. One of the best two-way running midfielders in the competition, and a player who reached his peak very early. So Dan Hanbury's been an elite player for all but probably one season of his career, which is a great tribute to him. So 180 of those games have been as an absolute top level.
They have. Just struggled the last couple of years with injury. We hope he can reproduce his best. As I keep saying, I think this is the last yelp, I reckon, for this group of Sydney, just for the time being, to win a flag. I still think they're very much in the frame. Won't let this one drop against a side that's averaging just over 10 goals a game, which is just not good enough to win games of AFL footy.
So here's a question for you. If Sydney doesn't capture a flag while Lance Franklin is there,
yep,
how do you view the contract to get Buddy to Sydney?
I think it's still a win. What for what he's produced for them. It's not all about flags. I know we all get a bit obsessed with silverware, and I'm particularly so, but it's not all about flags. He's given that club a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of people wouldn't. A lot of people would disagree with this, but I absolutely agree with you. And I think the great thing about Sydney is that Sydney puts themselves there every year, and they have to be beaten in September. If you want to win a flag, chances are you're going to have to get past Sydney in September.
The old bloodstained angels.
They just keep fronting up, and every now and again they get there in good enough nick with the opposition with enough dents in them to actually pinch one. And if you do that a couple of times every 25 years, you're ahead of the game in the AFL.
So we're both obviously going for Sydney. Saturday, Western Bulldogs v Melbourne. Western Bulldogs has kicked 11 goals in 2 weeks. Melbourne, 48. I know who I'm tipping, and it's not the Western Bulldogs.
Melbourne were fantastic in Alice Springs last week when they absolutely demolished Adelaide. The Bulldogs are working on something that's 2 years away.
Yeah.
I think.
Yep.
And
still got plenty of ball inside 50, and think they're in the top three for that. So there's getting plenty of footy in there and keeping it in there. But just can't translate that on the scoreboard at the moment. And I agree with you, they are a couple of years away, probably on the right track. And well done to Nathan Jones, game 250.
Yeah.
And stuck around when the club was at its lowest ebb and now is reaping the rewards. And let's hope by the time he retires, he's got a bit of silverware because he thoroughly deserves it.
Well, let's hope that come September, he's fit, available.
Yeah.
Because they are going to play finals.
Oh, they're playing finals, yeah.
I think Melbourne, and let's hope that Nathan Jones, he played in a final in 2006, which is the last time.
It was his debut year.
Which is the last time Melbourne played finals.
Yeah, and I think they won, they're going for six, what are they going for? Six straight now. I think they won five straight that year. So, you know, there's a lot of comparisons there. Let's hope once they get there, they have a bit of an impact too. My only concern with Melbourne is they should have played finals last year. It was a real pity they didn't. 0.5%. Was that what they missed out by?
Well, they missed out by messing up against Collingwood.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's right.
They?
Yeah.
And they left the door open for West Coast, and West Coast were good enough to walk through the door. So we on Melbourne?
Oh, we're on Melbourne.
Okay.
Now, really hard game. Hawthorn v Port Adelaide in Launceston. Port coming off the bye. Hawthorn coming off a 6-day break and a tough game against West Coast. You know, on form, you'd pick Port. And Hawthorn has, up until that West Coast game, have looked very flat. Only lost one there since 2012, the Hawks. I'm picking the Hawks here. It's a bit of a venue tip, but I have enough faith in what I saw last week. I'm going to pick Hawthorn here.
I'm going to go with you. And you're right. It's a venue tip, and it's also I need to see something more from Port Adelaide. So they had the big win in the showdown. They had the routine win in Shanghai.
Battle of the traditional rivals up there, yeah.
And I just want to see a little bit more before I would be comfortable tipping them in a game like this. I think the Hawks play the venue very well down in Launceston. And,
yes, Launceston. Good boy. Yes, well done.
I know. So Hawthorn, for me, will get this done in a close one.
Charlie Dixon got hold of them last time. They've won four of their last six against the Hawks. But, I have faith in the Tassie factor. And Hawthorn need to win it, too, to stay in touch with the eight. Now, a bit of controversy, the next game, Gold Coast v Geelong. First game back at Metricon for Gold Coast.
Yep.
Little return of little Gaz.
Yep.
Provided, I don't think there's any injury doubts hanging over him. Lynch back after 5 weeks out with a knee, expected to be back. Sam Day and Jack Martin are back as well. And they won this game last year between the two at that venue. And I wasn't overly impressed with Geelong at home last week against Carlton. I'm picking Gold Coast.
I reckon this is a tough one, Quarters.
I'm picking Gold Coast.
Okay. It's going to be a big night for Gold Coast. They've been the wandering minstrels for the first 3 months of the season.
And gone okay.
Yeah, I think they have.
Not been a disaster for them by any means.
No. They're back there now. I think they can do something in the second half of the year. If they are going to do something in the second half of the year, games like this one are the ones they absolutely have to win, aren't they?
Yep.
So I think I'm going to go with Gold Coast. I would probably go the other way. If it turns out that Tom Lynch doesn't play,
yep,
I would probably turn around and tip Geelong, I think. But I think with Tom Lynch back in the team, they'll want to – I reckon they'll want to give it to Gaz.
No doubt.
Because Gaz wasn't a great – contributor for Gold Coast over his last two or three years.
First couple of years, magnificent contributor.
Yeah.
Last couple of years, not such a great contributor.
And I think he was a bit of a disruptive figure, probably without meaning to be, but yeah. I think with all his injuries and his inability to get on the field, his reluctance to take painkillers, I think, to play,
yep,
I think irked the club. I think he was probably a little bit of a disruptive figure around the club, not completely intentionally. I think Gold Coast will want to make a statement, A, for their fans,
yep,
and B, to send a message to
the
little
guys. They got a few fans.
Well, both of them.
Yeah. Yes. Surf's not up today.
They'll be there. Gold Coast.
Essendon v Richmond, the dream time. Now, we were talking about Sheedy earlier, and this is his baby, and bless him for it. It's been a great game over the years. Jake Stringer's 100th game this weekend.
Yep.
You know, they're not without a chance, but they've beaten, who have they beaten? Western Bulldogs and GWS, who aren't exactly at playing their best footy. That's been their last 2 weeks. I'm still not convinced Essendon are back. List-wise, they've got enough talent there and depth there to cause teams problems, but I'm picking Richmond. Richmond haven't been great the last few rounds, but I've got enough faith in them. I'm picking Richmond here.
Richmond's just got to sort of trudge through the next few weeks, don't they? You get the feeling that that absolute hunger to push on and do something with this season has worn off a little bit through the middle part of the season. I reckon that'll come again.
Well, they're banking,
as they get close to finals.
Key to a premiership side, you start out strong, you bank wins when it gets hard, you somehow do it,
yep,
and then when the whips are cracking later in the year, you find your best form. I think they're being paced beautifully by Damien Hardwick.
And I think last week was a good win. I mean, given the loss of Jack Riewoldt early,
yep,
I think they had another issue. I think Basher Hooley went down with a groin problem, yep, so there were two rotations down.
They were. It was a good grinding win, and that's what great teams do. They find a way.
Yeah. Essendon, I mean, they beat GWS last week. We don't know how good a win that is, really, do we, given what GWS are going through at
exactly,
the moment.
Yeah. So we're both Richmond there. West Coast v St Kilda at Optus Stadium. St Kilda's last win, round one, gave a bit more of a yelp last week. That was good to see. Can't make a case for him averaging 107 points, the Eagles. Just the victories roll on. I think they're very much in that bracket. I think they'll just find a way to win if they're not at their best this week.
I think if you're watching this game as a St Kilda fan with your kids, you might want to give this an MA rating.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be pretty brutal. And I think there may be a bit of sadomasochism involved.
Sadomasochism.
I think that without Jake Carlisle, who's obviously missing through suspension, that reduces greatly their ability to cope with Darling and Kennedy and co. I see West Coast winning in defence, midfield and attack in this game.
And then go into the bye.
So this could get ugly, I reckon.
Okay. Let's hope you're wrong for St Kilda's point of view. I'm certainly picking West Coast to win it. On to Sunday and North Melbourne versus always a competitive Brisbane. Without doubt, you know what they're going to be competitive every week. At Etihad Stadium, Ben Brown and Harris Andrews clash will be worth the admission. North, gee, I have a lot of faith in them now. That was a great win last week over here. A lot of faith in North. I'm picking them.
I love what I'm seeing from North, and I like what I'm seeing from Brisbane.
Yeah, yeah.
At North's home ground, where they play their best footy, North are going to win this, and I think they'll probably win pretty comfortably.
Collingwood v Freo at the MCG. Now, you just mentioned MA rating. Could this be an MA rating for Freo fans?
It could be. Fremantle needs to get on the scoreboard early in this and get a toehold in this game. Otherwise, this will get ugly.
So this is going to be an interesting game from the ruck perspective. With Sandy out, how Freo are going to manufacture a competitiveness against the best ruckman in the competition, in my opinion, right now, and my Brownlow favourite in Brodie Grundy.
And arguably the best midfield in the competition too.
Yep.
So this is Collingwood's great strength.
With Wells returning.
If Collingwood gets on the board early and Fremantle doesn't match them, and Fremantle in a couple of away games hasn't been good at hitting the scoreboard despite having some of the play, then Fremantle are going to find themselves on the back foot, going back into their shells and copping a nasty one here. I think if they can get some scoreboard presence early, I think they can battle on and turn this into a respectable loss. But what I would call a respectable loss in a game like this is something under 6 goals.
And will be interesting to see how Chris Mayne goes against his old team. First game.
Well, he'll lay a lot of tackles. And he probably won't kick many goals.
That's right. That's a good prediction. I'm with you on that.
Which probably would make him a person that would play, that should play in the Fremantle forward line, because that's what they have been tending to do. Collingwood comfortably.
Same. Final game, Adelaide v the Giants, the struggling Giants at the moment, lost the last four at Adelaide Oval this game. Still a lot of injuries to both teams. Mm. Adelaide coming off an absolute shocker, which we'll put as an aberration. I think we can. I'm still on the Adelaide bandwagon in terms of them being able to challenge later in the year. Look out for Eddie Betts here, Indigenous round. I've got a feeling this weekend's going to be a bookends weekend for Indigenous round. You're going to have Buddy Franklin opening up on the Friday night, and this is the last game. I reckon Eddie's going to do something special.
Eddie might do something special.
I'm on Adelaide.
Adelaide Oval. GWS has no form to recommend them. I think both teams have manpower issues. There's no doubt about that. But at Adelaide, it's hard to see GWS making a stand. They've had four opportunities to make a stand quarters, and they haven't run out the four quarters in any one of those games.
And just finally, Leon Cameron, interesting comments. He's taken them back to basics. Well, I actually thought they were at basics. So they're back to basics from basics.
Well, I think the way they've played at times in the last 4 weeks, he might want to introduce them to basics, not take them back to basics.
Yeah, just don't go out there and have a kick, boys. It's a serious game. You've got to have some method to your madness.
Now, I've got some questions, Quarters.
Yep.
There's a bit of a focus on Hayden Ballantyne, who obviously, with Ross Lyon's comment that he's going to double down on playing kids.
Yep.
It raises the question, okay, which older players come out of the team? Peter Mackay says, I love Ballers, but 1.6 tackles a game this year is not acceptable. One from the last 2 games, 9 from the last 8 games. Barely touched the pill. Croden, that's Mitch Croden, has 27 tackles from his first 8 games in league footy. give Bellas a rest and some touch in the WAFL and see how he goes after the bye. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd stick with Bellas for the time being. I think there are some other players there who possibly go before he does. I can see the argument, and I think he's a good option, Crowden, but I'd stick with Bellas just for now, at least up until the bye.
So what we think is going to happen with Fremantle's team when it's announced later today is that we think Daniel Pearce will probably come out. Obviously, Stephen Hill is unavailable.
And Sandy's out.
And Sandilands is out through concussion. We expect Michael Apness to play in place of Sandilands. And Ross Lyon flagged Taylan Duman as a player he would like to get back in there. So let's say he comes in for Stephen Hill. Stefan Giro is a guy that they've been keen to play for a couple of weeks now. He may come in for someone like Daniel Pearce. I'm not sure they'll make another change beyond that for this week.
Yeah, it's a bit throwing lambs to the slaughter otherwise, isn't it, over there?
Yeah, away game versus a strong opponent, you've got to be careful. It's great to introduce kids. You've got to have a little bit of judgment as to when and where you do
that. Keep
it
to a minimum, exactly. Yeah, and I think the MCG, full of Collingwood supporters, expecting an easy kill.
Another one replying to Peter Mackay, I'd say. Michael Walters said yesterday that Hayden Ballantyne only needs 3 to 4 moments a game to change a game. Haven't got a name next to this one, actually. He says, Walters is correct. However, Ballantyne is not anywhere near 3 to 4 moments a game.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, yeah.
So, obviously, the judgment there not impacting the game.
My point is, I think he's got the runs on the board over a long period of time, and I think you keep your faith in him. Right, for now. You know, it's not forever, but I think at least a couple more.
Those tackle stats, I did look those tackle stats up.
Yeah.
And those tackle stats did surprise me that he's only at 1.6. Yeah. That is the only time he's dropped below about 3 tackles a game over
his
career.
But is that because he's laying them, they're just not sticking?
It may also be that they're getting outmarked a lot.
Yeah.
And so the ball's not hitting the deck, so the opportunity for him to get involved and lay tackles and apply pressure is not quite there at the moment. And Jude puts her 10 cents worth in on Hayden Ballantyne, says, no one available to replace Hayden at the moment. Losing Stephen Hill probably saves his spot. Got to have some experience playing to help the younger players, which I think is the point we've just made.
Yeah, there. The G you do. And I've got one from Kit. Lads, do you think Ryan will slot right in after East Perth games or have to command a spot by playing super well in consecutive East Perth games? Hard to get a spot now. Anyone likely to be arrested this week going into bye for a big crack at second half of the season?
Yeah, I'd ease Liam Ryan back.
Through the waffle.
I don't think there's any rush. And I think what you're going to see, West Coast has had a very good run with injury so far. They've lost a couple and they've lost, they've been, you know, Luke Shuey's is a big out, and Daniel Venables, obviously they would have loved to Daniel Venables to have played more, but they haven't had an epidemic of injuries. They'll get some injuries in the back half of the year, and there will be opportunities for young players to come in and play.
I'd ease him back in. I'd love to see him in he's in their best 22 for mine.
Absolutely.
In the year, because apart from anything else, he was building into some very consistent form. He's got that X factor too. That's why I want to see him in there come around September.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you're playing in September on the drier grounds towards the end of September, so we're talking preliminary final, grand final stage, a player like Liam Ryan is the sort of player that could bob up and do something special.
Yeah, kick 3 in a grand final or something, you know.
Maybe the difference between winning and losing.
He's going to stand on someone's head in a big final, I'm telling you.
He could get very excited playing in front of 100,000 at the MCG, couldn't he?
He could. Let's hope so.
He could cause a lot of excitement as well. All right, quarters, still tipping well, I believe.
No, not really. 6 last week. So 6 out of 8 you'd take.
Yep.
But I just made a couple of dumb tips. GWS I was on for the last time.
Yes, me too.
I have fair dinkum jumped off there now. And the other one I wavered on is I picked North, then I changed my tip to Freo. And it was a bit of a venue tip, that one. But full credit to North, thoroughly deserved it. Could have gone the other way, but yeah, look, 6. I'll take 6.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever likely to go the other way. I think it could have been closer, but for a couple of interesting umpiring decisions. Mm. But I think North were the better team.
How'd you go last week?
Yeah, I think 6.
Yeah. I think 6 was about of a par last week.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, good luck with your tips. We will be back on Tuesday to have a look at the round and all the ups and downs and the ins and outs of it all. I'll be wearing new pants.
And, well, let's hope so. He's wearing none today, so I wasn't expecting that when I came in.
It's a good thing we're not filming this one. All right, Quarters, good luck with your tips, and Thanks, we'll talk to you again on Tuesday.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.